Hi, I'm Lisa Levin.
And I'm Julie Sapper.
We're the co-founders of Run Farther and Faster and co-hosts of the podcast under the same name.
Well, we started this podcast as a Boston Marathon-focused podcast based on the experiences from our combined 31 finishes. We cover all things running-related.
We've coached runners of all levels and goal distances all over the world for over 13 years.
Thanks so much for joining us. We are so excited you're here.
Hey, Julie.
Hey, Lisa. How are you?
I am doing well. Busy. We're really busy right now. We're in the middle of fall marathon season, and I forget how it feels to me busier than spring season. I don't know why, but it feels very, got a lot of races and a lot of runners that are doing races. So I feel like it's busy. What about you?
Same. I think we know why. I mean, there's just more fall races. We've got, you know, many of the world marathon majors are in the fall. There's of course a half in the spring, but that coupled with of course, Indy, Marine Corps, Steamtown, there's just so many big marathons and so many of our runners are running them. And we feel so privileged that we get to coach runners to these big races. And this fall, I feel like we're just busier because I think just a lot of people signed up for big races and then called us to coach them. So I think it's also a product of that because so many, there's just such a wide variety. So why don't we talk a little bit about some highlights? Sorry about the squeaking in the back. I made the mistake of buying Cooper a new toy. Isn't this awful?
No, it's like fine.
I can't mute him. So okay. All right. So why don't you start while Cooper's
barking to go out?
Boy, okay.
Usually Cooper barks to go out when we're recording. So we've had a lot of highlights. I mean, I guess the last time we recorded, I think was Chicago, or just after Chicago. So we've had quite a few races since then. And one that kind of sticks out in my head, which was last weekend. And last weekend, we had both Marine Corps Marathon here in the DC area and Indy Monumental, which is one of my favorite races after having run it last year. I just really liked that race and kind of advocated for a lot of our runners to consider it as their fall marathon. And one of our runners, Sarah Sills, who's local to DC here, people may remember, I think we mentioned it on the podcast, but she, along with several other runners that we coached, went out to Twin Cities several weeks ago. It must have been September, to do Twin Cities Marathon, which is a great marathon. And they woke up race morning. Forecast was for hot weather, and they woke up race morning and found out 2 hours before race started, race was canceled because of the weather. And certainly we defer to race directors. We know that's a really, really hard decision to make. And, you know, really lives are on the line when you try to run a race in really hot weather. So they made that decision. I will say, following up to that, they gave full refunds to all of the participants, which is huge. That is a huge, I mean, once, you know, when you register for a race, that money gets spent early in race preparation. We know that having been on the side of helping, you know, race directors and directing races, and that money is kind of sunk, a lot of it. It's a lot of permitting fees and so many different expenses. You're ordering shirts and so many expenses are sunk. So they did offer full refunds and I believe guaranteed entry for next year as well, which is really nice. But that left our runners with the question of, okay, what next? What's plan B? And Sarah kind of right immediately after the race, she found a bib for Marine Corps and signed up for Marine Corps, but then thought, well, is Marine Corps the right course to try to run? Sarah has been trying to run. She did run a Boston qualifying time last spring, but it was only by 7 seconds, I think, or 17 seconds. So it was a very small margin. She did not get into Boston. So she's been trying to get that bigger gap. And we knew she had a lot of potential. And so she was really looking for a course. And we know that all of the factors that come together on race day have to really all have to come together to have really to be able to reach her potential. And if the course isn't great or the weather isn't great or something, you know, doesn't go as planned, it's hard to reach your potential. So she kind of was second guessing Marine Corps and wondering if, you know, it's a kind of a crowded course and would it be the right place to hit a PR? And I had mentioned Indy as another option, which was the same weekend. It was on Saturday where Marine Corps was on Sunday. So she actually, Indy was offering, I had reached out to Rob Mullett, who we had on the podcast last year, to ask him if it was filling and if he thought, you know, she could wait to sign up kind of get a sense of which race she wanted to do or if she should try to immediately. And he was really nice, responded right away and said there should be space, and also offered a discount code they were offering to all Twin Cities marathoners for 25% off registration for Indy, which I thought was very generous of the Indy Marathon. So when she heard about that, she figured, you know, let me secure my spot, and that she would decide as it got closer based on her. She had family possibly coming into town, and also looking at the weather, decide which race to do. And really, we left it up until the Wednesday before last weekend. And Wednesday we looked, and the weather in Indy was looking good, little humid maybe, but a little bit cooler than here in DC. Weather was looking warmer. And so she decided her family plans had changed too, which made it easier for her to go to Indy. And her husband, Jason, who's also a runner, made arrangements to be able to fly in. So he flew in like on a red eye, and he got in time so he could do the 5K on Saturday morning. So it all worked out. It all came together. But Wednesday before the Saturday race, we decided she was doing Indy. And she went out to Indy, and everything did come together. The course is a great course. The weather turned out well, and she ran. I mean, you know, we give our runners pacing guidance. They're very, you know, everyone has the great intention of following. It's not always the easiest to follow it. It's a guidance, not gospel. And she followed it to a T. Like literally every split that was coming through, I was like, how is she doing? Like, it's amazing how like spot on she was. And so she negative split the course. She PR'd and she got her Boston qualifying time. She is now aging up, so it actually gave her even a larger cushion. But she finished right at 3:39:00. So in 0 seconds. So that was a really cool, I thought that was just a good example of, like, you know, things don't always go the way you plan for your target race. And when they don't, you can pivot and you can regroup. And that fitness is still there. We maintained her fitness for the several weeks in between the races. Didn't do anything fancy or anything super long. She did not do another really long run in between. And look, her fitness was still there. So when the conditions come together, you know, our runners are really able to actually see the result of their training.
And I mean, amazing performance. Two things I want to point out. The first is, of course, the difference between Twin Cities and other second chance opportunities, of course, is the runners at Twin Cities didn't actually run the race. So their legs were fresh. And so I think that serves her really well. It was just a matter of making sure that she maintained that peak fitness and didn't do too much to prepare for the second bite at the apple, which she did an excellent job of doing. And the second thing I wanted to point out was it's sometimes really hard to buy into our pacing plans for folks, because a lot of our pacing plans, not all of them, of course, it depends on the course, but a lot of them are starting out a little bit slower than your goal race pace just to warm up. And we've never found when someone follows that plan that they come back to us and say, I really regret that I ran the first three miles 10 to 20 seconds slower than race pace. Because had I run that exact, you know, little that pace or faster, then I would have gotten my goal. No, because first of all, we can all do math. It's a matter of seconds. And secondly, we in our pace plans, we're not preventing folks from speeding up during the latter part of the race. It's more just about really holding back a little bit to warm up and not, you know, go out of the gates as fast as you can, unlike a 5K. So to that end, to all the folks who are racing New York this weekend, it's going to be really tempting to go out faster. And here's why. The course is really, the first 16 miles of the course is really favorable to go faster than your goal race pace. And you will have a few miles that are a little bit faster, you know, a few seconds faster, because just it's a lot of it is downhill and it's going to feel really great. We promise you, if you can hold back the first few miles of New York and really be honest about your goal race pace and run that goal race pace slightly slower and then ease into your goal pace and not run faster and just maintain even effort, you will be so happy when you get to mile 16. You'll be like, oh, this is getting hard, but I'm so glad I held back a little bit because now my legs are fresher to take on the last 10 miles of this race, because the last 10 miles of New York are very different than the first 16. So this podcast will come out New York Marathon weekend. And so for all running, good luck and definitely heed that advice. And I would like to give a shout out to all of our runners who've been racing, been doing phenomenally. I just want to bring it some attention to Steve. He ran Marine Corps Marathon. Last year was his very first marathon ever, which was awesome, Marine Corps. And he ran in the 440s. And he was okay with it. I mean, he wasn't unhappy, but he definitely felt like once he did it, he's like, I could have done that faster. Of course, our response was, you ran your first marathon, you did amazing, because when you finish your first marathon, it should always be celebrated, regardless of the time. But he wanted to come back this year and do things a little differently. And what he did was he treated the time between running Marine Corps last year and this year, he treated it as an opportunity to just run consistent mileage. He didn't completely fall off running. He didn't try and race a bunch of things, but he just ran consistently throughout the year. And when we resumed training in early June for Marine Corps, he had already had a really nice base mileage, and we were able to build from that. And he also really understood, because he had already run a marathon once, the importance of running easy mileage, easy. We talk about this all the time on the podcast, but if I looked at his stats from last year to this year, and his easy runs, even though he was fitter this year, his easy paces were actually slower this year. And Steve did his speed workouts once a week, sometimes twice a week when we had some workouts within the long runs, but mostly it was a lot of easy running, really a lot of 80-20. Steve's got a real stressful job. He does travel. He's got kids. He has a lot going on. Steve ended up running 25 minutes faster this year. He ran a 4:14. And truly the biggest change was that base mileage, not a ton, but just enough that he was consistent, and running his easy runs easier. So just two shout outs. We could give shout outs to all of our runners. We're really proud of everyone. We also recognize that there's a lot that goes into marathoning. It's not just about training. It's about life. There was a great article in the New York Times about abandoned spouses and how they feel, or abandoned partners during marathon training. And we recognize that so many folks out there have to sacrifice so much to be able to do their training, as do their friends and family, to get them to those start lines. And we just salute everyone involved in this process. And for those who are done and on the other side and you're thinking about your next marathon, we are here to remind you that this is the most opportune time for injury. So if you are feeling really fit and you want to try another marathon, just kind of evaluate your why, and also recognize that that fitness will not disappear. You have earned that fitness, and the best way to maintain that fitness is to stay injury free and then roll that into your next training cycle, so you can have a really great training cycle and keep building on it.
Very well said. I think that's something worth emphasizing, is that this is actually the period of time, the post-marathon, maybe 4 to 6 week post-marathon, is the most likely time we see injuries in runners who don't follow our recovery plan or a sound recovery plan. Because you come off of a marathon, you're kind of on a high. You may not be sore about a week after, and you think like, I can just jump back in to running my mileage, my speed, and your body's still recovering. And I can't count over the years how many runners who have come back to us and said, yeah, I should have listened to your, you know, recovery schedule that had me taking a week off. I came back too fast, too soon. And now I'm in a position where I have to take 2 or 4 weeks off of running because I have an overuse injury. So very worth repeating now that people are doing their fall marathons and coming off of fall marathons. So I think that's really a good point. And I do want to reemphasize your point for those who are running New York City, the importance of, we really emphasize this with our runners, and we have experienced it ourselves. We have run New York. I have run New York as one of my first marathons and swore I'd never go back because I suffered so badly in those last 10 miles. And I've also run it as my PR once I learned why it's important to go out at a reasonable rate, at a reasonable pace and reasonable effort on that course. So I want to reemphasize that. I think that's really important.
Yeah. So we actually have a great guest today. And the reason we wanted to bring on our guest, Carrie Jackson, who has been on our podcast before, is because as we are talking together today, we're moving through life. Things are really heavy right now. And we're trying to get through our day-to-day, like so many of our listeners and friends and family and runners and everyone. It's a very heavy time. But it's also important that we keep doing the things and moving through life. And we wanted to bring Carrie on. She's a mental training expert to help us and therefore help you with how we can navigate these tough times and still do the things we love and still be able to process all of the heavy information that's being thrown at us and still being true to who we are and our core values and doing the things that we love to do without feeling bad about that, because I think that is really important. We have to take care of our own health so that we can take care of others. So a little bit more about Carrie. She is a mental performance training expert and a certified mental performance consultant. She's the author of On Top of Your Game, Mental Skills to Maximize Your Athletic Performance. And she's also one of the world's foremost authorities on the mental and emotional challenges of recovering from injury. She's the co-author of the book Rebound, Train Your Mind to Bounce Back Stronger from Sports Injuries with our friend Cindy Kuzma, and is the co-host with Cindy of the widely regarded podcast, The Injured Athletes Club. She has a bachelor's in psychology, a master's in sports psychology, and over 2 decades of experience in sports and performance psychology. She's also been in many media outlets, including the Run Farther and Faster podcast. She's been in Runner's World, Outside Magazine, New York Times, Washington Post, U.S. News and World Report, and the Huffington Post, to name a few. And so we wanted Carrie to come on to talk about what we just mentioned, but also to talk about, of course, rebounding from injury, how to run your best during challenging times, and also recognizing patterns that may set you back, which is something we talked about on our podcast. And she's going to address some problem solving on how we can be better based on how we approach our sport mentally. So without further delay, we want to welcome Carrie Jackson to the podcast. Lisa, I hope you have a great week.
You too, Julie.
Bye.
Bye.
Carrie Jackson, welcome to the Run Farther and Faster podcast, or should I say welcome back to the Run Farther yes. podcast.
That's thank right. You. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
So much.
Thank you. Oh my gosh. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for inviting me again.
You're awesome. And it's so crazy because we were just talking offline. We initially reached out to you in September because our intention was to talk with you to help our runners better prepare for all of the excitement and stress of upcoming marathons. And then you had jury duty.
Yep.
So then we delayed it. And we feel so grateful actually that it was delayed, because now the world is in a different posture and we are feeling things are really heavy right now. And so before we begin and we get into the nuts and bolts of running, we wanted to start out the conversation and ask you, how are we supposed to move through the heaviness of life right now and be able to do all the things we're supposed to do as parents, coaches, partners, employees? How do we do that successfully? And what tips do you have for us and all of the folks out there listening right now with heavy yeah. hearts as well?
Yeah, I think it's a very challenging time. And I think sometimes we don't give enough credit to the impact that it is having on us. Even if you are not feeling directly impacted by everything that's happening in the world, that we're still impacted because we're still taking all of that in. And when we're talking about the way that we consume information and how the body consumes information, what I mean by that is like what ends up triggering our stress response, it still has the same impact on the central nervous system. So whether we're in it, you know, obviously to a different degree, what we're dealing with, if you're in it and you're living in a place where things are happening to you right in this moment, but also the body still takes in, it doesn't necessarily discern the difference between what is happening to you and the fear of what might happen, or that we take that stress on in the same way in the body. So that's just to say, like, if you are feeling, and so all of this is happening in the world and in sort of our greater, sort of this greater cultural context that we're living in. And then we also have whatever's happening in our immediate lives too. Like we also have, you know, things that are happening that might be big in that space too. So then it can feel very, very overwhelming. I think one of the biggest things that people struggle with sometimes, there's a couple things. One is feeling like, sort of feeling helpless, like feeling like I want, so it's in us, that's part of our makeup, like our psychology and sort of the way we're wired is like, we want to do something. We very much, humans like to feel like we have some sense of control. So it's very hard when it feels like many, many things are out of our control. And so we're like in the Buddhist philosophy, they talk about we're trying to grasp to put ground underneath us. Like I need something solid to stand on, and we don't like it when we don't feel like we have control. And so what we want to do is take action. And then if it feels like I have nothing to take action on, it feels very stressful and very overwhelming. So that's one thing, is like, I feel helpless and I don't know, I want to do something, but I don't know what to do. And the things that I do feel like they're not enough. So knowing sometimes like, well, what can I pull back and do in my inner circle to affect that? Because sometimes that's all we have control over. So what can I do with those relationships and those people that are meaningful to me? And then the other thing I'll see too that people struggle with is feeling guilty for doing things, like feeling guilty for who am I to go out and get out my run? Like, what a luxury. And sometimes not doing, self-selecting out of those things because of that guilt. So that I think that's, you know, one of the parts of the conversation that I'm having with people is like, it's okay. It's okay to do that. It's okay to take care of yourself. It's okay to still maintain self-care, even when other people are suffering. Like, it is okay to do that. That was a long, sorry. There's a big topic, and I'm so glad you guys are talking about it. I just wanted a diatribe there.
That's good. And that's important. And it also helps, I think, us frame sort of, like you said, kind of put a words to what it is, why we're feeling so kind of unmoored. But it's also a good transition into talking about running. And you said, you know, feeling guilty about going out for a run, or maybe some people are running to relieve that stress.
Yes.
And
yes.
How can running be used as a healthy tool with mental health, was specific to this, but also just more broadly with the stresses in our life? And I think, like Julie mentioned, we originally reached out to you to help prepare runners for, you know, the big things that they had coming, the big fall goals they had. But what we were seeing a lot was our runners dealing with stressful things in their lives and saying, well, I'm going to go out and run really hard and farther than you told me to, or harder than you told me to.
Yes.
I'm going to run every day because I need to run every day to deal with my mental health. Like, so how do we bring that? How do we use running as a tool in improving mental health?
Yeah. And it can be a really wonderful and effective tool in that way. Because part of what's happening when we elicit the stress response is there's a stress cycle. And part of what helps us move through that cycle, or one of the things, there's a lot of different things we could do to like kind of complete the cycle. And one is physical activity kind of brings us like full circle. So that, you know, and there's all kinds of research on that, right? Like any physical activity has an impact on our levels of cortisol and it has an impact on our stress response. So just that in itself, like running can help with that. We also have there's really interesting research on the difference between like the impact on our levels of stress and whether we choose to work indoors or outdoors. And there's a bigger impact when you work outdoors. So if you have the opportunity to get your, I know it depends on where you live and what the weather's doing, but like when you have those opportunities to like, even if 5 minutes outside, they've seen benefit from 5 minutes outside. So thinking about like, it's a, you know, how can I, so in those ways, it's like, in and of itself, a wonderful tool for mental health. I think it's also for some people a nice way sometimes to either, depending on if you do it solo or with a group, like if you do it solo, it can almost be like a mindfulness practice and a chance to just be with yourself and have a moment and have a respite from the stress. And it's okay to allow yourself that respite in that moment and have that. And then for other people that like, you want to run with a group, it's a wonderful time to connect. And that's another, our social connections is another buffer against stress, a significant buffer against stress. So you kind of like, so you can hit three, like if you go out for a run with friends outside, like, boom, like that's like, go for it. So those
except making sure the people you're connecting with are
yes,
positive
people you want to connect with.
Interactions. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So though, I mean, that in and of itself, like though using it, and I love that idea of like, how do we use it as a tool? And I think one of the things that I see my runners struggle with sometimes is that that is the only tool. So that is one of the things that's really important to take into consideration as a runner is that it cannot and should not be your only coping mechanism for stress. Like, and that's, I mean, really with my, I especially see this with my injured athletes that sometimes when that was the only thing and now that's not there, that's one of the big things we're working on is like, what other coping skills do I have? Or what coping skills can I build? Because I didn't build any, that was it. So it's important to take that into consideration that, that it is really important to have multiple tools in your toolbox for that, not just rely on one tool, because what happens when that tool isn't there? Like you need a backup hammer or a backup wrench.
So what are some of those backup hammers and wrenches?
Yeah. So sometimes I'll have, like, when people know, like, yes, I'm a runner, and I recognize that that is my main coping mechanism, and that maybe it would be good to have others. Like, sometimes I'll encourage them to explore, like, what other cross training can you do that you can all, that is also enjoyable. You know, because I love it when I'm like, my injured runners, they love it. You guys can probably identify with this, like, when they're injured and they can't run, and someone says to them, like, well, at least you could swim. And they're like, yeah, I don't want to swim. It's not what I want to do. I want to run. Like, so doing it in a place where you are healthy to start to play with, well, what are some other things I enjoy? And they can, and it could be outside of running too. So what you're trying to do is, you're trying to feed other parts of your identity. And this is important for everybody, but you know, when you have a high athletic identity, what happens is, or whatever that, like, you have a high identity in your career or as a parent, or, you know, whatever that, whatever sort of the highest identity that you have, oftentimes what happens is that also means a lot of our self-worth is in that particular part of our identity. So then when something happens in that, it has an impact on all parts of you. So really starting to play with this idea of, like, I am a runner and, right? Like, that is what I do. And I also do these other things, right? And that there's a difference between running is what I do versus running is who I am. And a lot of my athletes are, you know, would describe themselves as, like, I am this. And when you describe, like, I am this, that's when sometimes our self-worth gets connected to that thing. And then if something happens to that thing, whatever it is, it has an impact on your entire life. So really being deliberate and thoughtful about, like, well, what are other areas of my life that I also can put energy into? And that doesn't mean that running doesn't, that it replaces running, or that running isn't as meaningful to you. It's just, I have running and I have these other things too.
So, and that, I think you raise a great point. That's for anything in life. Diversification, yeah, exactly. Is exactly important.
Yes.
And what comes to mind, because we're in this stage now, is, of course, parents who are on the verge or are recent empty nesters.
Yes.
I think it's never easy, but yeah. I have observed from afar, because I'm going to be there soon, but I'm not there yet. I've observed from afar that the folks who have diversification in their lives and have other things going on, it's a little, the pain is a little less impactful. It's still very painful and hard, but the transition is a little bit easier, not easy, yeah, because yes, there are other balls in the air. So I think, to your point, that's a good idea. Can you give some examples of people that you've worked with, some specific tools as runners that you found has been helpful for them?
Yeah, like sometimes what I'll start with, so oftentimes this comes up with my, again, like with my injured athletes, like, this is sometimes we're not looking at it until it's like, oh boy, I need to look at this. And oftentimes I'll start with, like, well, is there anything that you were doing before that you know, once you started running, like, you just didn't really have time for and you'd miss, like, and so sometimes we'll start there and look at, like, is there anything in your life, you know, and, you know, so one of the things that has come up multiple times with my athletes is, like, some kind of artistic endeavor. Like, they like to draw one was a painter, one was a sculptor. That was amazing. She came back into sculpting. It was like, this incredible sculptor, hadn't done it in like 10 or 15 years. And I was like, oh, you, what? This is clearly, like, needs to be part of your life. This is amazing. But they just, you know, your athletic endeavors take up time. And so when that becomes one of the things that's the most important to you, that's where you spend your time, and that's okay. But sometimes we, in order to do that, there's a sacrifice that's made of something else that we really enjoy. So finding a balance with that. So artistic endeavors and music, that's another one, like instruments, and that's one that often will come up. And then sometimes it's fostering relationships with people that maybe they want to reconnect with, or oftentimes I'm encouraging them to, sometimes my athletes don't, when they get injured, it doesn't even dawn on them to connect with the their like athletic friends in any other way than the athletic world. And so we might be talking about that and courage. And they're like, I didn't even think about doing that. And it's like, and we don't, because sometimes those relationships are, they're born from the activity and they are fostered through proximity and through the activity. So it just doesn't even dawn on them to be like, oh, I guess I could invite them over or do something else. So those are like, I kind of start with the low hanging fruit first. And then I encourage them like to just make a list, like brainstorm a list of like, what are all of the things that have ever piqued your interest at all? Like whatever it is, if it's like, learning another language, taking a cooking class, like going to travel to a certain place, like whatever it is, just brainstorming the list and then choosing something on the list to go explore and get into that. So those are some of the like immediate things that I do with my athletes.
Gary, do you think that it's useful for runners who are not injured to do that exercise so that if for ideally whatever reason they didn't take a break from running, they're done, you know, training cycle, that they have that, you know, to fall back on? It's like, like we've talked about in previous podcasts, kind of building all the rooms in your house that you have a place to go.
Yes.
If running is not, if your running room shrinks or collapses.
Yes.
What about runners who are running, who aren't injured? Do you see running become a stressor for them, like something about their running? And where does that come from? Where do you see and how do you help them work through when running? You know, we have runners where we have to say to them, maybe you shouldn't be training for this marathon because this is becoming more of a stress in your life than a stress reliever. How do we as coaches help guide our runners on when they maybe should change paths? And how do runners avoid that pitfall of getting to where running, which is normally something joyful and a stress relief, which we've been talking about, becomes the stressor itself?
Yes. So I do see that happen. And there's a couple different reasons why that happens. One is anytime it's when this shift in perception of control happens. So when your want to has become a have to, right? So this is something that I want to do that fulfills me. I'm intrinsically motivated to do it. It brings me so much joy. I'm getting stronger. Like it's something that you want to do. Then when it becomes stressful is when that shift happens, when it's like, instead of this is something I want to do, it's like, oh, it's another thing on the to-do list. Like, oh my God, when am I going to get in my run? So that's one place where sometimes it tips over to like, now this is a stressor. And how do we find our way back to that passion and love for your sport again, which is like, I'm a big advocate. Like that's a big thing that I work on with my athletes. Like it is supposed to add to your joy, not add to your stress. So how do we get it back to that place? Looking at like, how do we rekindle some of the reasons you first came into it and what is enjoyable about it now? And there's different things that can cause it to make that shift. So sometimes it's like, you've signed up for a marathon, right? You have a goal that you're working towards and all of a sudden other things in your life came in and you're having a hard time, you're feeling overwhelmed and time factors, you're having a hard time balancing it. Or you've set a specific goal and you're putting pressure on yourself to get that outcome goal is another place that I see that stress. And now it's something I have to do. So it can also become a stressor if it's connected to your feelings of self-worth. Like that is when it also becomes now, instead of something that's fueling you and feeding you, something that can potentially be detrimental for you. When it's like, if I don't hit the times, that means there's something wrong with me, instead of like, oh, let's look at the data and let's look at the information and see what's going on. And maybe I need to take a recovery day, which is another reason why to, you know, have some other parts of your identity. So when you do have those times to fill, you're not like, well, I don't know what else to do with my time because I always run. So maybe I'll just go out for a run. Maybe it's fine. Right. No, take your recovery. The other thing I'll say that becomes a stressor sometimes with this shift is the data, is the wearables, is the like stressing out over the numbers. And I saw a great talk about this at a conference recently, and the way that they described it is like, how do we help our athletes be data informed versus data driven? Like, how do we use this as information, but it's not the end all be all. It is part of, not all of. So sometimes that becomes stressful. So often that is one of the things I'm doing with my athletes that have wearables. It's like, I just gave this as homework to actually to one of my cyclists who's taking some time off, and we're doing some non-data rides with nothing, which might be stress producing at first. For that, it was like, what do you mean that it doesn't count? Like, yes, it still counts. But people actually often find, I really needed that break from the technology. Like, that was something that was helpful. So sometimes that becomes the stressor.
Yeah, that's helpful for us as coaches too, because, you know, we give people a schedule and they have a schedule. And we always tell them at the beginning, it's guidance, not gospel. Like, we are here to change it around. But I think seeing it on an app or on a computer, on the actual, and them watching their data come through. And we see it a lot. And this is, again, one of the reasons we really like to turn to you for advice, because we have a lot of runners who think if they don't run a certain pace, they didn't have a real workout, or that they're losing fitness in their workout. And it becomes this downward spiral. And so that's a really good question for us too, as coaches, is how do we make them data informed? And they have this data, it's coming through. They have their watch, they have our schedule, they have Final Surge, which is our training log. They have that, but how do we make sure they realize that that's not defining their success or not, or lack of success?
Exactly. Yeah. Sometimes they don't decide how they feel until they see the number, and then the number tells them how to feel. That we don't want that. Yeah.
It's like that whole thing on the scale where it used to be like, if you'd have a bad day, if you got on the scale and saw a number that you wasn't like some people tend to do that. Like, how do you feel? So we're all constantly asking our runners. We're not pointing to any data. We're not saying like, oh, that pace was too slow, or that, that heart rate's too high. We're trying to say like, we're noticing this. Yes. But how did you feel? Because that to us is more important than the data. And we're trying to shift that away from like them focusing on the data all the time.
Yes, absolutely.
For sure. And you brought up a really good point that I just want to go back to for a little bit. And that is when people end up in a spiral where they're basing their self-worth on their race times or their performances in training. And one of the things we know definitely contributes to that as well is social media. For many people, they find social media super helpful. It's a community. It's a way to bond with others. It's a way to document training with photos and descriptions, and then have other people weigh in and say, oh yeah, me too. It was really cold today. My workout was harder or easier or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But it can also become an unhealthy obsession, and it can become a point where everything is performative, from how early you woke up in the morning to do your workout, taking a picture, to how much sleep you got. I mean, there are so many ways to be performative in training that are even outside of running. But do you have any guidance for us as coaches to help people who are in that position, that are finding that they found themselves in this place where their race times are so important to their identity? How can we help those people who are feeling that way?
Yeah, it's part of it is what's important to do is to help them understand how they're gauging their feelings of success. And it might be that they need to redefine what it means to be successful. So what happens a lot of times is that it's very normal to compare ourselves to others. Like, it's, and in some ways it can be helpful. The challenge is that oftentimes we use it as a measuring stick to view our own shortcomings and internalize that in a negative way, instead of using it as like, oh, I'm identifying something that I would like, and now let's figure out what would I need to do in order to make that happen, right? It can be a roadmap, but instead it's we just are comparing our behind the scenes to everyone else's highlight reel and don't recognize like, oh, guess what? They have behind the scenes too. You're just not seeing it on social media, because some people do that and some people don't. So, so for coaches, it's important to, make sure that in addition to setting outcome goals, that you're also setting performance goals, and more importantly, process goals. And there's, all of the research points to that if you want to have an impact on performance, you need to focus on the process goals, which is like, what do I need to be doing in order to accomplish the performance and the outcome goals? But when you're only gauging your feelings of success based on the outcome goal, and that outcome doesn't happen, that's when we have a tendency to feel like we failed or are beating ourselves up. And oftentimes those outcome goals aren't like they haven't necessarily even set themselves up for success with accomplishing that outcome goal. So they're holding themselves to an expectation that is absolutely unrealistic and then feel like they failed when they didn't meet the unrealistic expectation. I talk about secret goals a lot with my athletes where it's like, oh, you're pissed off. You accomplished your goal, but you're pissed off. Let's talk about that. You know why? Because you had a secret goal. It's like the goal that you're holding. So I tell them like, your stated goal is the goal you tell your coaches and you tell Carrie and like, this is what I want. You know, I'll just be happy if I do this. And like, this is what I'm going for. But the secret goal is the one you hold on to in the back of your mind, which is like, really what I want is this. I want, you know, to finish mid-pack. I want to be top 10, whatever it is. I want to hit this certain time. Even if you haven't set yourself up to be able to have that as a realistic expectation, we're still holding on to that, engaging our feelings of success based on the secret goal, not the stated goal. So that's why you could have an athlete that accomplishes their goal and they're upset. And you're like, why are you upset? Like, you accomplished your goal. It's like, ah, you had a secret goal, didn't you? So sometimes having that common language too, of like, there's nothing wrong with having secret goals. You just have to understand that you have one and then choose. You have to choose, is the secret goal the real goal? And what do we do in order to set you up for success for that goal? Or is the stated goal the real goal? And that is a worthy goal. And that is what you're gauging your feelings of success on. So being really clear on that so that when they get to the end of their race, they know what they're gauging their feelings of success on. It doesn't matter what anyone else is doing. Those are their goals, not your goals. What are your goals? And how do we want to gauge your feelings of success?
Speaking of secret goals.
Yes.
A follow-up question to that is, what advice do you have for runners working with coaches on how to maximize their relationship with their coaches when they are feeling this way?
Yes. Yeah. So that coach-athlete relationship is so important. And like having that rapport with your athletes and trusting your coach, like that is a really significant part of this whole equation. It's like, is this the right coach for me? And is this the right time for this coach? And it's okay. It's tough because you build a relationship and people have, you know, feelings of loyalty. Like it can be very challenging for both athletes and coaches to recognize times when it might be good for that, like you guys have taken that your athlete has gotten what they need from you and it's time for them to go to a different coach and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But you know, so that communication is really important. So I think the most important thing for the coach and the athlete to recognize and remember and talk about is that you're a team, right? So that if you feel like you can't be honest with your coach, they're not going to have the information that they need in order to make informed decisions about how to help you get to your goals. And that is really, really important. So I think that to me, that's like kind of foundational piece is like, are you able to have, you know, an honest, non-judgmental relationship with your coach so that they can get that information. And sometimes it's not anything that the coach is doing. Like sometimes it's the athlete feeling like, I don't want my coach to be disappointed in me. So I'm going to tell him I did this, even though I did only this, right? Instead of like, it's okay. Life happens. But if they feel chastised or judged by their coach, they're going to lie. They're absolutely going to lie. I can tell you because they tell me that they're lying to their coaches. So you don't want that. You need to have that strong sort of, and I think, you know, one of the things we see in the research too, that's really impactful that I think maybe isn't, maybe we don't talk about enough is that the athletes also want to know that you care about them outside of their sport. Like they want you, they hire you for a reason, you know what I mean? They hire, but you know, in order to help them accomplish their goals, but asking, you know, building that rapport and asking them about things that are happening outside of running too goes a very long way. It is a very easy thing to do and it goes a very long way for that relationship.
Yeah, I think that also goes back to what we were saying at the very beginning is that the stress, outside stressors, whether that be what's going on in the world, whether that be what's going on in your family, work, whatever, absolutely affects your running. And we see that as coaches all the time. When people are struggling with their running, a lot of times we'll say like, what else is going on? And they're like, oh yeah, this really stressful situation at work. I'm going to quit. I'm going to, you know, but I need my running to get through that. So then it's a balance too. So that was, you know, sort of my, another question I had going back to what we were talking about a little bit about before, but you know, that stress, those outside stressors having an effect that we don't realize. And we think we're running to relieve those stress. Like, how do we find that balance how do we recognize when stresses in life are getting to be too much, where maybe we need to change our goals? And we have that with a lot of times we see that as coaches, the demarcation lines usually are runners training for marathons. When they have stressful things going on in their lives, training for a marathon is not always the best thing they can do. And it doesn't always end well, because it could be training and doing everything right. When they're training for a 5K or 10K, it's not. So how do you find that line between, you know, where do you make the decision of like these life stressors that are going on that we're finding out as coaches, because we're asking the questions? How do we then say like, this is maybe too much. Maybe you need to change the goal from this big, hard marathon that's putting a lot of miles on your body to something.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for part of that is helping your athlete recognize that that is not a failure. That is an adjustment, and that anytime you set a goal, adjusting is part of the goal setting process, because we don't live in a vacuum, because stuff does happen. And so, and I will say there's another element there too, that's interesting with my like endurance athletes, which is that sometimes there's a tendency to always set the bar higher. And I tell them, you know, sometimes when you're setting the bar higher, what you really need to do is set the bar down. Like, stop setting the bar higher, set the bar down and regroup and see, like, is this still the right goal at the right time? Like, does this make sense at this moment in time with this new information? Sure. When you originally set that goal, it was a fantastic goal. But you had different information in front of you. Now you have this information. So much of it is about acceptance of what's happening in life right now, and that's okay. And that sometimes you need to make adjustments. But with the endurance athletes, like, well, I did a 5K. That means I have to do a 10K. Well, I did a 10K. That means I have to do a half. Well, I did a half. So now I have to do marathon. Now I have to run, you know, ultra endurance. No, you don't. Like, you don't have to do that. So that's part of it, is like, well, what do you enjoy and what makes sense right now? And so for me, one of the things, and I do this personally with my own athletic endeavors, stress is stress. Like, it doesn't matter if it's stress from your training or stress from external factors outside of training. It is still impacting your central nervous system. All of it is. So if you're having a moment in your life where there's higher stress in your life, I personally back off on my athletic endeavors, because we know that you're at increased risk for injury. So that's something. And for me, my goal is lifelong fitness. And part of that is don't get injured. Right? I've dealt with a lot of injuries. So that is something now I make the adjustment in a very deliberate way of like, okay, I need to back off on what I'm doing right now. And that's okay. And that's hard to do when you're training for something. It's hard to trust that. It's hard to go to kind of recognize, like, you know what, this week I can go to maintenance mode. I don't need to, you know, and talk to your coach about like, what can we do? Cause this is too much. Or do you need to adjust the goal? And adjusting the goal is not failing at your goal.
Yes, that's what I was going to say, is I think it goes back to defining success. And we all create our goals. They're created by us. No one is telling us you need to do this. We create them. And so if we spend all this time creating goals, why can't we spend time adjusting goals? And if we adjust our goals, nobody cares but us.
No, and, but we think other people care. Yeah. We think,
what will Dave McGillivray likes to say, my race, my rules.
Like
that. Your race, your rules. But that you started saying, you know, we think that people care.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about social media and how you know, that comparison. We see that a lot, especially with all of our age runners, but especially our younger runners who are really dialed into Strava, Instagram, Facebook, you know, whatever it's seen going on. And they're, you know, second guessing their training, their abilities, they're, you know, having great success, but then they see somebody did it faster or sooner. Or so how do you deal with that with your athletes that are kind of
So part of it is we might have like social media breaks. So it's I mean, at its most basic level. So here's an analogy. Like I used to race cars many, many years ago. I used to race cars. And one of the things you're taught when you're racing cars is like when you're trying to control a skid, look where you want to go versus where you don't want to go. So oftentimes you're in a skid and you're like, oh my God, I don't want to hit that car or go off the track or whatever it is. But if your eyes look that way, that's the direction that you go. So So I have them take these breaks and then pay attention to how they feel about themselves, about their running, when they are actively engaged in social media and Strava, and when they are not, and then look at that and like, which one of those for you was more enjoyable? And sometimes it's the comparison. Like sometimes it is like, it was okay, but I like that. So then we go, okay, well, how do we use that in a way that's helpful and not hurtful? Right? Like how can we use Strava and use, you know, social media responsibly in that way so that it's not detrimental to how you're feeling about it. But for some that are like, oh gosh, I guess maybe I am comparing too much, or I am using it as a way to, judge myself in comparison to, then it's, it might not be something that you want to look at, right? But sometimes we have to be disciplined with our own focus around that.
Yeah, I love that. And I will say, I cycle and my kids cycle and they do cyclocross, and that's a very, you're doing lots of turns and it's the same thing. You look where you want to go. And that has always been the hardest thing for me because I'm looking at where I'm going to crash and going, I don't want to crash it over there.
Right. Exactly.
And I was like, look the other way. So I think that's hard for us to do, to convince ourselves that.
Yes. Yeah.
Look the way we want to go.
That's, yes. Yes. That's, and I think the other thing in there too, is that we do think that, like, what will people think of me if I don't do that? If I, you know, change the goal, or like, what is everybody going to think if this happens? And it's like, they're not going to think anything. They're not thinking about you at all. Like,
that's why we try to tell people they're thinking about themselves.
They really aren't.
They're more concerned about themselves than they are about you. But we do. We get that a lot. Exactly. And I think that happens with, you know, we were talking about before, running with people. When you run with a group, or you're on a team or in a club, and you think that everybody in that group is looking at you. And really, I mean, we've experienced, and we see it because we coach a lot of people. They're not looking at you. They're looking at their own. They're more concerned about their own results. And I think that's hard. That's hard for people to, and it's human nature, I think, to compare and to worry about what other people's perceptions are of them.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, it's absolutely normal to do that. And with all of these things, it's figuring out, because oftentimes it is very normal for us to engage in all of this very human behavior. And then it's looking at, it's one of the things I'll talk about a lot. It's like, sometimes our greatest strength is also our greatest challenge. So there's always two sides to, like, how do I use this in a way? Like, what parts of this have been helpful to me, and what parts have gotten in my way, and how do I get clear on creating that boundary for myself? Of like, oh, okay, this is, in this way, comparison is helpful. In this way, it's hurtful. So if I catch myself engaging in it in a hurtful way, what do I need to do in order to make that shift?
Do you ever see a shift in as people get older? Is there maturity that comes?
Oh, yeah.
Do you ever see that? I think we see all different ages having, you know, but I always kind of think of some of our runners who've been doing it for a longer time or older, kind of have chilled out, and they kind of sit back and they can say, so maybe, you know, some of it is with age comes maturity as well.
Yes. I think a lot of, the longer you're on the planet too, you have the opportunity to have a lot of different life experiences, including a lot of challenges. And you start to, for yourself, get clear on what's worth worrying about and what is not. So I think that's part of it. And then we still, because we're human, it doesn't matter how old we are, how old my clients are, like, we'll still get hooked. And it's about recognizing when you're hooked and knowing what to do to come back, versus thinking that there are some people in the world that never get hooked. That's not true. Like, that's not how it works at all. It's which is why I talk a lot about resilience. And like, how do we bounce? What do we do for ourselves to be resilient? Because thinking that you're always going to feel confident or always feel happy, like, those are big fat myths. It's not how it works.
Yeah. And that's also, I think, applicable to the inevitable aging in sport. And, you know, getting older isn't getting injured at all, but sometimes masters runners in particular, they hit a certain point and you just can't go further. But it doesn't mean you should stop your sport. Right. But it can be hard to reconcile the two where, I've been competing at this level and I enjoy competing because I like seeing improvement. And now I know I've hit that peak. How do I stay true to my sport and enjoy it while adjusting my expectations and goals?
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about that and how to best continue with your sport in a healthy way.
Yeah, it is a big challenge and transition for my master's athletes and aging athletes and multiple people independently of each other have said to me, like, Carrie, I don't know how to deal with the fact that all my peers are behind me. Like, I don't know how to handle that. And one of the ways we do is by recognizing, I mean, and it is in I'll say in this respect, it's similar to injury in that where is my body right now in this moment in time? And what would be a meaningful goal to work towards for this body? Right. So, so that you're still setting goals and you're still striving and you're still working towards something. And the adjustment is in the mindset of what is a worthy quote unquote goal. So it really asks athletes to redefine it. You have to redefine your relationship with your sport, and that's hard. And that's the part and it takes time. And it often is it's a transition. And it's not like something that, I will say some athletes are quicker to come to a place of acceptance and make those adjustments than others. Many athletes that I've worked with, it has been challenging to redefine that relationship and what does it mean to me now? And it's a really interesting question. I mean, you know, not a lot of people had to ask themselves that during COVID too, when it was like, I don't have a race, right? I don't have the outcome goal. So what does my sport mean to me now? And that was a time where people had to redefine their relationship to their sport and ask themselves like, oh, what does it mean to me to do this? So that's what you have to do. If you're someone that wants to continue in their sport, there's going to be a time where you're going to have to redefine your relationship to your sport. And that's okay. That's part of the process.
Yeah, that seems applicable too, I would think, to runners who are coming back from injury or after a hiatus, and they come and they say, well, you know, 2 years ago I ran this time, or I was running marathons, and well, now you're in a different place and maybe in a different stage in life where now you've got 3 kids and you've got a busy job. And that's, you know, I think that's a really important exercise for anybody to do, is where I really like that. Like, where is this body now? And what is a admirable or a goal that's going to make me feel accomplished right now. So I think that's really important. What are kind of the characteristics or the practices, I think, that you see, or the mind shifts that people who are successful, who like leave you and say, you know what? Yes, I feel good now. Like, I'm on the right track. Like, when they leave, what do they usually say I'm sure it's very individual, but what do they usually say is what has helped them make progress?
I think, you know, a lot of it is the internal dialogue and the way that they are talking to themselves and the way that they are choosing to gauge their feelings of success and self-worth. Like, those are some of the big shifts that help them feel like so that's like sort of on the broad stroke realm. And then they do, you know, and then when they have tools to be able to, so it kind of depends on why they decided to come to me in the first place. So, you know, a lot of people will come because they have, you know, putting pressure on themselves or have performance anxiety. And they're like, so they have specific tools to be able to know how to manage that, so that instead of putting pressure on themselves on race day, it's like race day is the day to celebrate all of the hard work. So it helps them step back and see things from a broader perspective, so that they know that I'm not just gauging my feelings of success in regard to the outcome of the day, but the entire, everything it took to get to the start line healthy. Like, we celebrate that too. So I think those are some of the, like, I have tools. I know what to do for myself now. I know how to talk to myself in a way that's more facilitative because your brain is listening. So you want to really pay attention to how you're talking to yourself. So with a bit, that's a big part of like, what are the stories you're telling yourself? What are the narratives you're creating? How are you talking to yourself on race day? Like that's a big part of what we do. And so that internal dialogue shift is a pretty significant one that people feel like is a change for them.
And that seems like that would be something just like we train our bodies to raise, we train our GI systems, like that you would have to train to do, to be able to do on race day. You can't just pull it out and say, okay, I'm race day. I'm going to have this great internal dialogue or whatever. Is it really something, is that something that you see people have to kind of practice and fail at and get better at and have that process?
Yeah, because it's just, it's a, their skills, just like any other skill, right? So we don't really think about like confidence is a skill, focus is a skill, motivation is a skill. So that's part of what I do is help break down the skill and learn. And so we can learn and practice the skill because you're like, you can't, you know, run 1 week and then, you know, 20 weeks later, expect to run a marathon and you're fine. Well, I ran that 1 week. I should be fine, right? Like, it's not how it works. Same with your mental skills, right? You can't just work on it once, be like, sweet, got that down. Like, that's not how it works. You have to practice in order to be able to execute in a moment where you really need to execute.
And you are a prolific writer and you have many workbooks out there that allow people to be able to do that on their own. So before we go, we just want to ask you to share a little bit about what you do in terms of your private practice, as well as what you do in terms of your workbooks and how people can find you.
Yeah. Yeah. So the best place to connect with me is my website, carriejackson.com. And I have a blog and all kinds of resources there for mental training for athletes, both athletes that are injured and non-injured athletes. So I have resources for both. And I also have a mental training membership. So if you're like, I really enjoy working on mental training, but I don't know how to sort of break down this idea of like, these are skills and how is resilience a skill? And what do I do to work on that? Like the Rebound Mental Training membership is a wonderful place if you're feeling like, well, I don't know if I want one-on-one coaching, but like to have something, some direction and some specific drills to work on. That's a great place it's so much fun to check out too. So we get to do live stuff together and then you also get like all these mental training drills. So,
you don't have to be injured to do the rebound.
No. Yeah. So that's for, it was sort of, that was born out of the pandemic where people were like, recognizing that they needed resilience during this time. And so I was like, hey, well, let's do mental skills training for sport and life and start this membership. So yeah, you don't have to be injured for that. If you are injured, a great place to go is our, the other website we have is, injuredathletesclub.com. And there's great resources over there for injured athletes.
I love me the Injured Athletes Club. I've been an avid member for many years, and the work that you and Cindy do is incredible, and your podcast is great too. So walk us through briefly like the steps that one would need to take to engage with you, whether it's through the club or privately.
Yeah. So if you head over to my website, the carriejackson.com, you could get on my contact, like send me an email if you're like, you know what, I think this is something I might need to work on. I feel like I've got the physical stuff down and I think it's the mental thing that's holding me back. I hear that a lot. Like, jump on there, 30-minute consult. We'll chat for 30 minutes. I can hear more about what's going on and see if we might think it's a good fit to work together. I'll have some pretty cool Black Friday deals for the membership. So if you get on my email list, I send out actually all kinds of fun stuff on the email list, like blogs and, you know, like recommended podcast episodes to listen to and all kinds of stuff. So that's a good place to go. And then definitely if you are an injured athlete, you can join our support group, Injured Athletes Club on Facebook. It's an amazing thing to be a part of. Super supportive, like absolutely incredible. I'm so, so proud and so honored to be a part of that. I also have group coaching programs for injured athletes too. So if you go over to that website, you can see all of the different resources we have for if you're injured and need some extra support during that time.
Carrie, excellent. And we'll put all of that in our show notes.
Yeah, awesome. Perfect.
Do you work with youth athletes?
I do. I do also work with, I primarily, because I specialize in endurance athletes, I end up with a lot of adults, but I do actually work with high school athletes also.
All right, Carrie, well, you have been amazing as always. We could talk with you forever. And I think what makes you so effective is you're so relatable, and I never feel like you're talking at people. You're definitely someone who's been through it as well. And I feel like you really understand the athletes that you coach, not just because you're an expert in your field, but also because you've moved through that as well, through many Yes. of the issues that your athletes encounter in life and in sport. So thank you so much for joining us today. We'll put everything in the show notes. And before we go, we just wanted to ask if you could just leave us with one piece of parting advice for all of our runners who are about to embark on their goal races this fall.
Oh, yes. Don't forget to have fun. Like, remember that it's supposed to add joy to your life, not stress. And so take those moments, even though you know, and if I think the other thing is, like, if it was easy, it wouldn't be as meaningful. It's not supposed to be easy, right? So even finding joy in that, finding joy in the hard parts, is that's all part of it.
Love that. That's great. Thank you so much, Carrie. It was great chatting with you, and we really appreciate all of your insight and, like Julie said, being relatable and really reaching out. We're sure that all of our listeners, whether they're injured or they're just training or whatever, they're going to have something to take away from this. So thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to the Run Farther and Faster Boston Marathon podcast. We want to give a special thanks to our editor, Aaron Bryan. And if you enjoyed this episode and enjoy listening to our podcast, please share it with others, and please leave a review if you haven't done so already on iTunes. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.